creeps, but I liked him anyway. Another thing, if you touched one of the paddles or anything while you were passing, one of the guards would say to you, "Don't touch anything, children." But he always said it in a nice voice, not like a goddamn cop or anything. Then you'd pass by this big glass case with Indians inside it, rubbing sticks together to make a fire, and a squaw weaving a blanket. The squaw that was weaving the blanket was sort of bending over, and you could see her bosom and all. We all used to sneak a good look at it, even the girls, because they were only little kids and they didn't have any more bosom than we did. Then, just before you went inside the auditorium, right near the doors, you passed this Eskimo. He was sitting over a hole in this icy lake, and he was fishing through it. He had about 2 fish right next to the hole that he'd already caught. Boy, that museum was full of glass cases. There were even more upstairs, with deer inside them drinking at water holes and birds flying south for the winter. The birds nearest you were all stuffed and hung up on wires, and the ones in back were just painted on the wall, but they all looked like they were really flying south. And if you bent your head down and sort of looked at them upside down, they looked in an even bigger hurry to fly south. The best thing, though, in that museum was that everything always stayed right where it was. Nobody'd move. You could go there 100,000 times, and that Eskimo would still be just finished catching those 2 fish. The birds would still be on their way south. The deers would still be drinking out of that water hole with their pretty antlers and their pretty skinny legs, and that squaw with the naked bosom would still be weaving that same blanket. Nobody'd be different. The only thing that would be different would be you. Not that you'd be so much older or anything. It wouldn't be that exactly. You'd just be different, that's all. You'd have an overcoat on this time, or the kid that was your partner in line the last time it got scarlet fever and you'd have a new partner. Or you'd have a substitute taking the class instead of Miss Egeltinger. Or you'd heard your mother and father having a terrific fight in the bathroom. Or you'd just passed by one of those puddles in the street with gasoline rainbows in them. I mean, you'd be different in some way. I can't explain what I mean. Even if I could, I'm not sure I'd feel like it. I took my old hunting hat out of my pocket while I walked and put it on. I knew I wouldn't need anybody that knew me, and it was pretty damp out. I kept walking and walking, and I kept thinking about old Phoebe going to that museum on Saturdays the way I used to. I thought how she'd see the same stuff I used to see, and how she'd be different every time she saw it. It didn't exactly depress me to think about it, but it didn't make me feel gay as hell either. Certain things, they should stay the way they are. You ought to be able to stick them in one of those big glass cases and just leave them alone. I know that's impossible. But it's too bad anyway. Anyway, I kept thinking about all that while I walked. I passed by this playground and stopped and watched a couple of very tiny kids on a seesaw. One of them was sort of fat, and I put my hand on the skinny kid's end to sort of even up the weight, but you could tell they didn't want me around, so I let them alone. Then, a funny thing happened. When I got to the museum, all of a sudden I wouldn't have gone inside for $1,000,000. It just didn't appeal to me. And here I'd walked through the whole goddamn park and looked forward to it and all. If Phoebe'd been there, I probably would have, but she wasn't. So all I did, in front of the museum, was get a cab and go down to the Biltmore. I didn't feel much like going. I'd made that damn date with Sally, though. 17. I was way early when I got there, so I just sat down on one of those leather couches right near the clock in the lobby and watched the girls. A lot of schools were home for vacation already, and there were about 1,000,000 girls sitting and standing around waiting for their dates to show up. Girls with their legs crossed, girls with their legs not crossed, girls with terrific legs, girls with lousy legs, girls that looked like swell girls that looked like they'd be bitches if you knew them. It was really nice sightseeing, if you know what I mean. In a way, it was sort of depressing, too, because you kept wondering what the hell would happen to all of them. When they got out of school and college, I mean. You figured most of them would probably marry dopey guys. Guys that always talk about how many miles they get to a gallon in their goddamn cars. Guys that get sore and childish as hell if you beat them at golf, or even just some stupid game like ping pong. Guys that are very mean. guys that never read books, guys that are very boring. But I have to be careful about that. I mean, about calling certain guys bores. I don't understand boring guys. I really don't. When I was at Elkton Hills, I roomed for about 2 months with this boy, Harris Macklin. He was very intelligent and all, but he was one of the biggest bores I ever met. He had one of these very raspy voices, and he never stopped talking, practically. He never stopped talking, and what was awful was he never said anything you wanted to hear in the first place. But he could do one thing. The son of a bitch could whistle better than anybody I ever heard. He'd be making his bed or hanging up stuff in the closet. He was always hanging up stuff in the closet. It